The content in this magazine could contain references of topics and difficult subject matter that may be triggering. Please honour yourself, inner knowing, and proceed with whatever help or guidance you feel is intuitively aligned.
Welcome to the Sovereign Magazine podcast. I'm the founder of Sovereign, Nicole George, and I'm so happy you are here. Sovereign Magazine guides women to tune into and embody their highest selves. And in this podcast, you'll hear from women walking the path to self-discovery and empowerment and who want to share their stories with you. Through heart-led conversations with our inspiring contributors, you'll hear the voices behind the articles written for our monthly digital online magazine. This is your chance to hear from women from all around the globe who are creating a movement based on the energy of the moon. Here's your host, Sovereign's in-house moon mentor, Miranda Murphy-Gall.
Today, I am welcoming our front cover contributor, Ebony Allard. I'm so delighted to have her here. Ebony is an AUDHD modern mystic, author, artist and self-actualization facilitator. She is a nervous system accredited, award-winning master coach focused on using somatic awareness and human design to help curious, complex, creative, and often neurodiverse misfits drop the projections and perceptions of who they think they should be in order to survive and instead thrive by being empowered, embodied, and fully expressed. So thank you so much for being here with us, Ebony. I've really been looking forward to meeting you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to come and make these things a little bit more intimate, personal, real by having these conversations and bringing them to life.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. So Sovereign's April theme of the month that our listeners will be reading at sovereign-magazine.com is uncertainty. And you wrote an incredible front cover article entitled, "The Quality of Your Life Depends Entirely on the Quality of Your Relationship with Uncertainty, Especially if You Are Neurospicy." So I'd love to start by asking you exactly what uncertainty means to you. And just to explain a little bit more about that title.
So uncertainty is inevitable. And as human beings, we are wired both for change and evolution and continual change, right? No 2 days will actually ever be the same. And we are constantly in growth and actually moving towards death. And it freaks us out. And we can't handle it. We don't know what to do with it. And we would really like things to be the same. And these two polarities, I guess, are what forms all of life. You know, the balance of harmony and being alike, which is what often creates friendship and kinship and belonging, is fantastic, but it can become stale if we continue that, you know, all the way out. And then we have this other one of, you know, difference and change and sparks, and that can be and create attraction, which then, or friction or frustration, which then creates something new. And that's how life itself is created, is through that spark, that attraction, that two things coming together and creating a third. And that is true for all of life and every different plane. And developing that access or getting that access correct is going to be unique for each person. But for a lot of neurodiverse people, the ADHDers of the world want more change, more difference, more spontaneity, more, you know, of that kind of that axis, if you like. And then often the autistics of the world would like everything to be controlled and the same and reliable and sustainable and much more on that axis. Now, I'm simplifying massively and no two people are the same. But because I have both within me, it's been something that has been very interesting to me throughout my life. Of like, on the one hand, I really like things to be predictable and sustainable and controlled. And on the other hand, I really like things to change and be spontaneous and new. And that has both caused me to feel completely insane at periods of my life and also often projected or enabled me to project this image that gets received as ease or perfection. And so for a lot of my life, people have said to me, so easy for you, or you make everything look so easy or so perfect. And what they don't see is the desperate peddling, you know, underneath the surface, or all the down days of complete burnout and not being able to do anything. And so I have developed my own relationship with uncertainty to try and find something that is both fun and sustainable on that front, because there's motivation and there's energy and drive and inspiration, but also sustainable on an energetic and physiological level, where actually I'm able to work with my nervous system and my body and recharge and know what's good for me. And I think for the most part, I have found that kind of sweet spot for myself. And then what happens when you hit your mid-40s as a woman is your entire physiology changes. And so, you know, and that's the same for anyone and any human being, is every time we think we've got something figured out, everything changes anyway. And so developing a relationship with uncertainty is going to be universally helpful for everybody, because the one thing that remains true for everyone is that life is far more uncertain than we would like to believe. And navigating our relationship with it will impact the quality of our lives. Mm,
absolutely. Wow. Well, you have such an incredible level of awareness, self-awareness. And I think that that is really testament to your own personal journey and, you know, what you share with others as well. Something that struck me when you were talking about like how life is created and how, you know, two things come together to create a third. It made me think, obviously, about my own son and my own child and children, because actually, while we might have the intention of creating something, we never quite know what that something or someone, that little human, who they're going to be, right, until they get here. So everything is really living in the unknown. Even when you create something and you think you want to, you know, have it be a certain way, you definitely can't. So that really struck me, yeah.
And I think, you know, it's more obvious almost when we look at it in terms of creation, in terms of the birth and, you know, two humans coming together and creating this little personality. And often for a lot of people, they have no idea what they're going to get and they don't really think about that bit, right? It would just be so nice to have a child. And then when they, you know, the reality of I have very little control over this other being, it can be quite a shock. But if we extend that out into anything else, you know, one of the things that people often again say to me is that I am a prolific creator. You know, I've written many books, many courses and offerings in the middle of, by the time this comes out, the Oracle deck that I've been working on will be out in the world. There's another book coming. You know, there's so much creation within me. And a lot of that is because I have chosen not to have children. And so all of that creation energy goes into these things instead. But also, my relationship with creation is that each thing has its own life force, has its own, you know, is not controllable by me. And so we can put an intention out there. But what happens when we come at it from a more feminine energy of inquiry rather than goal, right? Like it has to be this. That creates more freedom. And I think we're living in a really interesting time where a lot of us are beginning to really see a shift from I want things to be this, or I'm going to manifest something and then be disappointed if it isn't exactly what I was expecting or what I was trying to create, versus understanding that there is this unknown, uncontrollable, uncertain element, and that uncertainty doesn't have to mean unwanted or scary or bad. You know, sometimes uncertainty can be exciting and brilliant and limitless and beyond our wildest dreams or imagination.
Oh, I love that. I want to capture that and share that with my little one, because that is definitely something that, you know, I think, wouldn't it be wonderful to just grow up with that as a mode of thinking and being and feeling less frightened of the things that we can't control? And I I think that, you know, I've actually been having a lot of conversations lately about uncertainty and how it affects us, like when we're making decisions, because it's really hard to sometimes make a decision when you just don't feel sure. And it does, you know, oh, should I do this or should I do that? Should I pick this one or should I pick that one? Or there's so many options, I don't know which one to choose. All of those types of things can really, they can be light and easy to manage, or they can sometimes be really heavy when it comes to like real life choices. And so, yeah, I wonder what advice you might have regarding like making decisions and uncertainty.
I think there's a couple of things in there. So life has changed so much. And because we have so much information and we have access, and particularly for younger people, have grown up only seeing so many other people's lives and so many options and so many choices in the palm of their hand every single day. If you think back to the time of Stonehenge, or, you know, these big, wonderful things, that was someone's life's work. And they didn't compare themselves. They didn't see what everyone else all over the world were doing. You know, there was no comparison. There were no options. It was, do you want to do this? Yes, no. And so they were much, much more in touch with their own body wisdom, their own internal compass. And there's something about moving beyond our circadian rhythms, our infradian rhythms, our seasonal rhythms, our life rhythms, because we as a culture and as a large society have really made young and summer and masculine and, you know, all of these things the thing that we need to be all of the time. You know, you can get bananas all year, you can get strawberries all year. And so this means that we're also expecting us to be in full bloom all of the time. And it would be insane to expect a flower to be in a full bloom all of the time. And so really there's an element of stripping everything back and really looking at, well, what is my life for? What lights me up? What do I want to pursue? And again, bringing this to a place of inquiry and curiosity and journey and enjoyment of the experience, rather than the outcome, and rather than being able, you know, so many of us sit where we are saying, I want to be there, and never actually get to enjoy the journey because we're so desperate to be somewhere. And then even when we're there, we don't get to enjoy it because we want to be somewhere else. And that's not how we were designed. We are having a physical and emotional experience. That's what separates us from energy and from spirit or from anything else. And it is that part, the emotional and physical experience, that gets to be the most important part. So whatever decision you make, there is no right or wrong decision. Both are going to lead to some kind of experience. What you do with that experience, your attitude towards that experience, your enjoyment or a presence with that experience is actually what is going to create the reward, rather than how it's seen through other people's eyes or how it's seen through your eyes, seeing what you think other people see, which is so devoid of embodiment.
There's so much wisdom there. And it really does come back to like being present. And it brought to mind these words of like craving and aversion, and like always wanting something other than kind of where we are now. We're like, we don't like where we are now, we want something else. And I think that really speaks to society at large on so many levels. And so, yeah, just coming back to like being in the present. I love what you say about it being about the journey, not the destination, and about like being in the experience of it. So I guess that brings me nicely to my next point, which is being in the experience of it is sometimes really uncomfortable. And, you know, you mentioned the physical aspect of it, right? And embodiment, you use that term body wisdom. I love that. And I'm thinking that, you know, in your article, you share quite a bit about the polyvagal nervous system, which I'm just guessing most people haven't heard of, although most people will be familiar with the nervous system and maybe, you know, fight or flight and rest and digest. But the polyvagal is something that is kind of new. I've just started learning about it myself, and it is absolutely fascinating. And you write about it in such a like a personable way. I mean, it's really easy to understand how you explained it all in your article. So I do encourage listeners to go there and really dive in there. But how does that relate to us, yeah, navigating the discomfort of uncertainty?
Again, we live in a society that right now values comfort over anything else. And we've all forgotten that being uncomfortable is actually what creates newness and what creates our desire for something different, and that we're not designed to be comfortable all the time. So one of the other things that I see, particularly in the online world, in a world that is starting to look at the nervous system and polyvagal theory, is this idea that you want to have a regulated nervous system. You do not want to have a regulated nervous system 100% of the time. This is not accurate. You want to have a nervous system that is able to move through a wide range of different states and move quickly from one to the next. Now, what most people are actually doing is they've got good, bad, so like two states they can move through, and then they move through them really, really slowly because they identify with one and then they identify with the other. Whereas if you look at a baby has got a huge range of different states where it's giggling and it's staring and then it's crying and then it's, you know, it's like it's so many different states, and the fluidity that it moves through them is again really, really fast. So they've got both range and the ability to move very, very quickly without identifying with one or the other. So when we're working with our polyvagal tone, what we're actually looking to do is widen the amount of states that we have available to us and the speed with which or the lack of attachment that we have to any of them. And I think that in some ways that's one of the ways that my work is different, because I can go into, you know, you would need to go up to come down, and I can tell you how to move through from one state into another. But that's so heady and intellectual that it takes you away from the point. And the point is, whatever you're feeling is really okay. It is an emotion, which is energy in motion. So it needs to move. And the more you move, the more it will move. And or it's a sensate, in which case we can take our attention to that sensation within the body. And as soon as we take our intention and our attention to that sensation and be like, does it have a color? Does it, you know, what does it feel like? Has it got a shape? Where exactly is it in my body? When we do that, it will move and it will go somewhere else or dissipate or change. And so the only reason that people are uncomfortable is because they're thinking their feelings rather than feeling them, and playing them over and over and over again on a synapse loop in their mind. And so why this work is so important is it is taking us out of these loops in our head brain, actually into the body, where nothing is static and everything is moving all of the time.
Wow, that's mind-blowing. And it is exactly that, it's the mind loops that we can all get into. And many a night in the middle of the night with insomnia, with thoughts processing, wondering, you know, how to move through it, how to get out of that state, and or how to fix it somehow, right? I think that's what we're looking for, is a solution to whatever challenge we feel is being presented to us. And yeah, I just feel like the idea of changing the states is also a really, really new idea for me, because yes, you're right. We're told that, or we believe that somehow if we're feeling something extreme, if we're in a freeze state, I'm very familiar with that freeze state, and it's about how quickly you can kind of recover, that is actually a measure of health, I guess, of holistic health, rather than, you know, just being in a state of sort of flatline comfort. So, you know, and I know personally, I've been in a state of freeze for a really long time, something that, a trauma that causes me to go there. And then I'm there for like a week and I can't really function. And I assume that I'm not the only one who has that type of experience either. So, yeah, what type of tools could you recommend? Like, say, one thing to help someone move from one state to another?
So it does depend on which state you're in. So, and it also depends a lot on each individual person. So one of the things actually that I find very difficult and unhelpful about the internet is how many people are really happy to give one piece of advice to fit all sorts of people, because actually that's can be really dangerous, right? Like offering a piece of advice and saying this fits everybody, it's inaccurate and it's not going to work that way. However, what I will say is if you are in a place of freeze or disassociation, what your body wants is to rest and digest, right? So the healthy place would be rest and digest, and freeze or disassociate is the kind of dysregulated side of that. And so the first thing that we need is to bring ourselves back into the body. And that can be a very small sort of touch that is like stroking your own hand, or just, you know, like you would a small child, I suppose, right? Offering them a tiny piece of safety by putting a touch onto your body and allowing it to know that in the here and now, it is safe. For a lot of us, when we're in that freeze state, there is no threat. There is no bear at the door. There is nothing actually. So I would give different advice if there was, right? Like if there's something going on and you're in freeze for a reason, that's different. We actually want to come back to the here and now. And often that's through action and purpose. Often we need to come up in order to go down. And so for a lot of us, when we're in that freeze state, but we're also, you mentioned insomnia earlier, and we're not able to sleep, you need to move. You think, oh, I'm so tired, but you're not going to be able to reach a place of rest and digest without first coming up into action and purpose. So it can be as simple as going to make yourself a drink, you know, a herb tea or a hot milk or, you know, something like that, or anything that allows you to find that sense of action and purpose again that brings the nervous system and the energy up a little so that it can then drop into rest and digest. But it's very, very difficult to go from freeze or disassociate across into rest and digest without having that kind of peak of energy first. So doing something different or distracting or, you know, whatever it is that allows that energy to change can be then what takes us into another place. And the other thing with a lot of insomnia is that actually as we get older, we don't need as much sleep. And so for a lot of it, it's like most people are labeling something insomnia when actually they just don't need the sleep and they don't like being bored. And we've all got so, like one of my favorite things as a kid, again, I remember being like, oh, I'm so bored. No one is bored these days. No one allows themselves to be bored. And they, in the same way as we're so uncomfortable with being uncomfortable, we're also really uncomfortable with not being stimulated. And so having periods of time where there is, where you're not consuming anything, you're not thinking anything, you know, is actually, again, really good for us. We're supposed to have periods of yin, of absence, of processing, of resting and digesting. And so sometimes it isn't freeze, it's just that it's an uncomfortable state of boredom that you don't know what to do with.
I'm just going to ask you a sort of quick fire round. What is your top self-love, self-care ritual that you do for yourself?
Go for a walk every single morning. So in human design terms, I'm a manifesting generator, which means I have a defined sacral, which means that I cannot know how much energy I have or don't have without moving my body first. And I would make a big distinction between movement and exercise. So for me, I get up and I move my body, and that means going for a walk. Sometimes it is a very purposeful walk, and other times it is a stare at the sky, listen to the birds, what's going on in the world, walk. But I move my body every single morning.
Beautiful. What's your favorite way to spend your weekend or your downtime?
Again, it really, really depends. I have a very split personality, or there are these two parts of me. One is to be in solitude and to be drawing or creating or making something. It fills me with joy and can very much replenish me. The other end of the spectrum is to be around people, to be listening to them and asking them questions, spending time with family or friends, or hosting small events like I just did this weekend, and where I brought together a group of people and we painted pottery together, and that kind of thing brings both of those together and is an absolute joy for me.
Oh, wonderful. So what or who is your biggest inspiration?
Nature is my biggest inspiration. You know, I can stop and watch a sunset or look at the sea or notice a bud or something growing and just see so much inspiration in it. If the colors, the shapes, the relation that it has to the things around it, you know, all of that is hugely inspirational.
And you referred to cycles and seasons earlier so beautifully. So yeah, taking the taking nature and bringing it into our own lives as we are a part of nature, obviously. Thank you so much. I want to ask you to share, please, about your services. You had mentioned your oracle cards. I really want to hear about those.
So the oracle deck is a Jean Keys human design oracle deck. So there are 64 cards. Each one relates to one of the human design gates or the I Ching Jean Keys. And each one I have hand-drawn, and it comes with an affirmation on the deck. It also tells you its number and the astrological sign. And then in the guidebook, there's some information about that gate, but also an embodiment practice for each one. And yeah, that's very exciting. I'm really excited to see how that goes out in the world. And there's going to be a QR code in the box that then links through and takes you to an audio version of the deck, and then that will allow you to come and be on my list and learn some more about the Kismet Codes, which is another offering that is on its way this year. I have a signature program called Misfit to Maven, The Fundamentals, and it celebrates its 10th year. In March this year, it turned 10. And alongside that is my book, Misfit to Maven, and the core tool that I created in 2014 is called the Value Filter. And I have only, I guess, realized as a late diagnosed ADHDer, the relevance of that to those of us who experience the world differently. And what it does is it takes all of the theory of life and make it applicable and practical inside your bodies. It acts as a compass so that you know what is a yes for you, what is a no, how to have really good boundaries, how to relate to other people, how to not be bored, you know, when to be, when to do, like all of these things. And that's called the Value Filter, and is one of my cheapest access point offers. And when people come and work with me and spend, you know, 6 months working for $7,500 with me, when I say to them at the end, what was your most, like, what was the bit that changed everything for you? And they always say the Value Filter. And it's £111, and it makes such a difference when you work with me with it, obviously. But it's such a powerful little tool because it takes all of these things that we know about potentially, like values, but takes them from being cerebral really into being practical. And I think that's one of my superpowers, is taking the things that feel very complicated or that we want to know more of but are actually a distraction, and takes them into, well, how do I apply this to my life to see real shifts and changes?
Wow, I am so drawn to your work, and I hope that our listeners are as well. You are absolutely amazing, and I would just like to say thank you so very much, Ebony, for being here. This has been an absolute delight. You've shared so much richness, and we are very, very happy to have you on the front cover for April.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much to Ebony for being our first contributor to share her story on the Sovereign Magazine podcast. Ebony has kindly offered listeners of the podcast 50% off one of the following: Ebony's amazing masterclass, The Value Filter, which you heard her mention in our conversation, her signature program, Misfit to Maven, or if you're intrigued by Ebony's human design work, check out her Misfit to Maven Extended Human Design Report. Just use the code SOVEREIGN or follow the links in the show notes. You can read Ebony's front cover article in full in the April issue of Sovereign Magazine, which is out now. Just head to sovereign-magazine.com. And thanks to you for listening to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening as much as we did in creating it for you. You can hear our next episode with our brilliant April contributor, Michelle Cowell, tomorrow, the 9th of April. And in the meantime, you can follow us on social media at The Sovereign Magazine. And we're always looking for incredible women to be featured in our magazine. Just go to sovereign-magazine.com/get-featured to see how you can be featured in our Global Women's Magazine.